It's Berlin briefing time. On that last stretch towards the summer break, Germany just got to watch something like a political car crash in slow motion. Chancellor Friedrich Merz wanted to mark a fresh start through a cabinet reshuffle. Instead, there were hurt political egos, they went flying publicly, there was solidarity against the Chancellor. All this inside drama could threaten the stability of the government, which makes it all the more important here to separate the Shakespearean drama of it all from the political facts. With me here to do just that is Andreas Rinke, the chief correspondent for Reuters, and our very own chief political correspondent, Nina Haase. And Andreas, I want to start with you because as we're recording this on Thursday, we're getting reports that there's a letter by East German state premiers from Friedrich Merz, that's his conservative party, who now want to roll back some policy. What kind of threat is all of this for the authority of Friedrich Merz himself?
Well, this letter is not a threat. He is in a very difficult position after what you just described. It was not very helpful that he tried to change so many posts in his government. I think he should have limited that to some key figures. But that three Eastern German prime ministers write a letter making clear that positions in East Germany are not the same as in West Germany, in fact, because that's the debate, is pretty normal in the German political landscape.
Nina, now we have regional elections coming up in Saxony-Anhalt. Sven Schulze, he's the top candidate. He's also one of those state premiers. He is fighting neck and neck with the far-right Alternative for Germany. That's the first place in Germany where they could come to power. And it's looking very close indeed. He's now campaigning on what sounds like a differentiation against the German Chancellor.
Yeah. You stay away from here, please, because you're not benefiting me at all.
Yeah, and let's think back. The Merkel days, it was good to have Angela Merkel show up for your election campaign. So how difficult is this in the long term for Friedrich Merz's standing in his own party?
You know, we've talked about the Saxony-Anhalt elections that are coming up a lot.
And we'll keep doing it for the next couple of weeks until the 6th of September.
Because they are crucial. Yeah. And that is so striking in itself, I find, that out of 16 regions, this one region could mark a watershed moment, really, for the democratic landscape in this country. And what we're seeing there is that the local conservatives who are trying to campaign against a very strong far-right AfD that is very firmly rooted in the villages, in the communities. They're having a hard time anyway. But now, with all the discussions happening in Berlin, of course, people are getting the feeling on the ground in Saxony-Anhalt, you're just confirming what the far-right AfD keeps telling us, that the people in Berlin have no idea what's going on in the countryside, that they're only concerned about their own positions. And so, please, can we get back to talking about content, about policy, about where to address the issues that the far-right AfD have put on the table, where they are wrong, where they're making promises they will not be able to fulfill. So all of this is really not very helpful for the local candidates. Having said that, it does remind me very much of what happened with former Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who became toxic to the SPD candidates when all the discussions in Berlin were happening, and, you know, communities that were run by the SPD at the time said, okay, please stay away. Remember the Brandenburg elections where Dietmar Woidke really didn't want to be associated at all with the then Chancellor.
Just step in and underline that, because it reminds me not only of Scholz, but it reminds me of Merkel and Schröder, the former chancellors as well, because in some periods of their chancellorship, they were not welcomed by local campaigners, because sometimes regions do election campaigns against Berlin. I mean, that's a typical pattern, not only in Germany, it's always the capital versus the regions. And that's what some parties actually look for. That's the AfD, but also the BSW, which campaigns with posters saying this is an election against Merz.
And the BSW actually being the far left party here that pops
exactly.
up.
Exactly. You know. So the Prime Minister, Sven Schulze, and his conservatives have to do more or less the same, because that's the local mood there. But since we talked about Merz, it's not particularly a Merz problem in this case. He has some particularly problems, but not in this case.
What is a Merz problem, though, is that he defined as a key task for his government to keep the far right out of power, which is very much campaigning on an anti-party establishment platform. So it's not about issues, it's not about the individual image, it's about the established center parties versus the far right, which describes itself as the alternative for Germany. And we were at this press conference together yesterday where the new parliamentary group leader, Thorsten Frey, was presented. He was elected. Then there was a press conference. And then Merz did point out that the conservative CDU, despite trailing in the polls behind the AfD, is one of the few remaining conservative big tent parties in Europe. And so, let's first of all get to the fact of what this cabinet is going to look like and the stability of it. And you asked Friedrich Merz the question that everybody was asking themselves, which is basically whether he's now done with his cabinet reshuffle. Let's just take a listen to that.
Are the changes now complete, or do you expect further changes within your coalition or your coalition partners following the state elections in September?
There are still a few vacancies that need to be filled within the parliamentary caucus and the government. These are already known. I do not plan any further changes.
So no other changes expected, but what are the changes, Andreas? Which are the ones that stick out for you that will be relevant for how Germany will feel abroad to other countries?
Big question. I think the most important change for himself is the chief of the chancellery. That's Nina Wagen, who's the successor of Thorsten Frey, who is changing to the head of the party group in the parliament. She's the key figure for Friedrich Merz now. I think that's most important, that their relationship actually works. She won't appear in public very much, but she has to organize this government. And that has been a complaint in the last month as well, that Thorsten Frey, with all his abilities, was not the best organizer, which created some of the problems Merz had. So I think Nina Wagen is the key figure. If she works well together with Merz, he has a chance to stabilize this government. That doesn't exclude that there are problems, but it has to run smoothly.
And this is really also interesting because Thorsten Frey, he's a softly spoken, incredibly diplomatic person. He's not abrasive at all.
You know?
Yeah, and not the kind of power broker that you would expect as a chief of staff. That's why there had been months of criticism, particularly of him. Now Nina Wagen coming in, the head of the women's union within the conservative CDU-CSU party. And actually just a couple of months ago, none of us in the room would have suspected that that would happen, right? Were you very surprised?
No. But that's one of the astonishing things with Merz, that sometimes he's reacting in a way nobody expects him to act. And he's, in my view, much more open than the people criticizing him are actually saying, because he also appointed for his party a CDU general secretary who is also in the Frauenunion.
In the women's group.
And she's also part of the social wing of the party, because there was a complaint before.
Which Friedrich Merz is not.
Which, exactly. His man group, I would call that, is rather liberal, very economic friendly, conservative. And he has chosen people who are different. And I think he understood after 1 year of chancellorship, he understood that it's important for him to have people around him who don't think as he thinks. That's making him stronger.
And that is not the only reason, I think, right, why Nina Wagen got chosen for this position. It was also because she was very effective. I mean, she was the one who had to push through one of those crucial reforms that we also have debated here on this podcast many times, when Friedrich Merz promised that there was going to be the autumn of reforms last year that never came. But one of the people who actually was working diligently and very thoroughly at her ministerial desk was definitely the health minister, Nina Wagen, and she managed to get these reforms quite far in her sector.
Yes, and now Carsten Linnemann, the former party general secretary, was parachuted into that role. Let's just take a listen to what he himself said about him in that potential role just a couple of months ago. Let's take a listen.
But just to be a minister once, so it says so on Wikipedia, that's not for me. I also wouldn't have been successful. If they had appointed me, say, as Minister of Health, I probably wouldn't have succeeded in that role. People would have asked, why is he becoming health minister? What does he have to do with that? So as they say, cobbler, stick to your last, do what you're good at, and I'm doing fine.
So this is the man who's now exactly
I'm
the
suffering.
Health minister. Yes. Very unfortunate, right?
Archives are deadly.
And social media is too. Yeah.
Is this just one of those things, or is he going to get into trouble? Will Merz face more trouble over this cabinet reshuffle, which, and I just need to remind us again because it went so badly, was supposed to be a fresh start. It was really supposed to be something that could infuse new energy into his government.
I don't know how Linnemann is going to act. I mean, we just talked about Wagen, and nobody would have expected her, without any experience in health policy, to be fairly successful after 1 year only. So we don't know. I mean, give Linnemann a chance. I think his biggest problem might be that he's very outspoken, as we have just seen. So he talks a lot. And if you are reminded of what you said a few years ago, it's always could be embarrassing. But I think we have to give him a chance. Maybe he is pretty strong. I mean, he has very good connections and better connections than Wagen. He has connections to the coalition partner, SPD. He's considered to be conservative, so he has no problems with this wing. At the same time, he's now dealing with health issues who are very controversial. We'll see. It's really too early to say. And I would also say, as a trained historian, let's wait. I mean, if this excitement we have at the moment is still an excitement in 2 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time or 2 months' time, I mean, there are no new problems coming up, and then this reshuffle will be not forgotten, but won't have that much an influence.
And I think, Andreas, you're completely right. I get the feeling sometimes that somebody should step in and take the mobile phones away from all these conservative politicians who are really creating so much of a discussion themselves as well. Mm. And that is definitely one of the key characteristics of our time, isn't it? That there used to be a summer break where people, including politicians, had to pick up a telephone if they wanted to talk to somebody. Are you as disgruntled as I am? Are you as unhappy? We need to do something about what our party chairman is doing. Yes, let's go to Berlin. And so the threshold to have a chaotic discussion, one where emotions are running high, where everybody's getting involved, the threshold was so much higher at the time. And now they're constantly in contact via WhatsApp. They're sharing, you know, the outrage that somebody's position has created in their local communities, etc. So that is terribly dangerous, not just for the Conservatives, of course, also for other parties. I think it also played a very big role in the breakup of the so-called traffic light coalition, that people were constantly in contact and not more disciplined. So it'll stay in a scandal. What I'm trying to say is it's going to stay a scandal if they want it to stay a scandal. And some people within the Conservatives, Christiane Hoffmann, the former government spokesperson,
deputy government
spokesperson from the previous government, so not at all a Friedrich Merz supporter, said that. She said, What is it that he's actually done wrong? I'm not known to be one of his most fervent supporters, but sorry, Can you please get your act together?
Well, Friedrich Merz is the one who actually took the phones away from his party colleagues when they gather in the party headquarters.
Yeah, not for the summer holidays, but yes, for the party meetings.
But during those meetings, because they're basically being partially webcast, or at least there was just too much information coming out. So it's really interesting that you should mention that. But there was a lot of anger, and there was a lot of public anger vented from within Friedrich Merz's own party over the past 10 days. And I just want to recap very briefly what set this all in motion. Jens Spahn, the former parliamentary group leader of the CDU, he saw himself having to resign over using a surrogate mother in the United States to have a child with his partner. And that is illegal in Germany. So he stumbled over that, that it was a very sudden resignation. So Friedrich Merz didn't get any information from one of his closest party allies.
Michaela, can I just say that it's not illegal to have a child that comes from a surrogate mother in Germany, but to actually get into the process of having a child?
It would not be possible,
right?
In Germany,
it's not. That is not possible. But that is Jens Spahn's excuse. Yeah.
So Friedrich Merz was kind of blindsided. He didn't see that coming. He then used the opportunity to have his cabinet reshuffle, and that went really badly wrong. Well, he. There was a letter coming. Okay, tell us how badly did it go wrong?
Well, we have a reshuffle now. We have new ministers. That is fine. There was one issue which didn't work, and as I mentioned at the very beginning, I personally would have done it slightly differently. Spahn had to go, so it was clear that you have to have a new person at the head of the party group. That is now Thorsten Frey. And then you had to need a successor for Thorsten Frey. That's now Nina Wagen. And you had to have a successor for Nina Wagen. That's now Linnemann. Okay, that went pretty fine and actually very smooth. Within 3 days, Spahn was gone. Within 3 days, Thorsten Frey was appointed. Within 3 days, the others were appointed. The problem started afterwards. So that was fine. Perfect management, I would say, more or less. That he had the idea, well, if I'm doing that, my reshuffle will be slightly bigger. And he changed other positions. And the most controversial one was the transport minister, Patrick Schnieder from Rheinland-Pfalz. And the problem for Merz started when he had chosen a person. This person said yes, to my information, twice.
Twice, yeah.
And then in the morning before the press conference at 4 a.m., Merz got a no, I'm not doing it. So, I mean, every politician would have a big problem with that because nobody of us was aware of what was happening. And he went to the press conference presenting his new cabinet members, and there was one missing, one new one. And we, as we do in media, correctly and wisely so, we talk about what doesn't work. So it's a bit that overshadowed more or less everything.
But it wasn't just the press, though. There were huge complaints, letters written from within his own party ranks.
No, that's what we described then.
Yeah. He lost discipline within his own party. There were really a lot of hurt feelings, which many felt they could vent publicly.
And to this day, nobody really knows the reason, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, Andreas, why Patrick Schnieder?
Well, Patrick Schnieder, I mean, just a reminder. I mean, if we go back 6 months, there was a lot of criticism of Patrick Schnieder that he was not the best minister. And I don't know what was the main reason for replacing it, but he was not considered to be one of the best ministers, to be fair. If there was a personal issue as well, I don't know if it was one, because he was criticizing Merz and the coalition partner that he can't actually fulfill his tasks as transport minister if money is taken away from his budget. And actually, most of the conservatives would agree with him. And they applauded him when they had a meeting with Merz. He spoke after Merz, and the applause went not to the chancellor, but to him, to the transport minister, which is considered to be a slight blow to a chancellor. And that could have been one of the personal, emotional reasons for replacing him as well.
But he does have a very big budget. I mean, he's got, you know, he's one of the two ministers that are essentially in charge of a special budget, together with Boris Pistorius, the defence minister. There's the also a special budget for infrastructure,
but
right?
The finance minister took away some billions from his normal budget with the explanation, well, you have a new budget as well, so you don't need it in the old budget. But the new budget is only for repairing streets and bridges and so on. And the normal budget is for new construction, where he actually was missing money.
So, bottom line is, this government has a 12-vote majority in Parliament. How much danger does this pose for this, all this disgruntlement, for the stability of Friedrich Merz's own political camp in Parliament?
That's a big and most important question, I would say, as well. We will see. I mean, yesterday he... to say it this way, but I had asked him this question as well.
Yeah.
And not him, to him, but to Thorsten Frey, who has actually the task to organize majorities.
Yes.
And he said, well, sometimes a small majority is actually a plus because everybody is more disciplined. We will see. And we have two different sorts of votes. We have a secret vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big danger, because mm-hmm. nobody can actually say who voted against. And
yes.
we have seen that with
like the election of the chancellor, which
exactly.
needed mm-hmm. two turns to get Friedrich Merz elected because his own camp didn't follow him then completely.
Exactly. And the second vote is open. There it's much more easy to discipline parliamentarians, because you see who was loyal and who wasn't. And if Thorsten Frey is clever, I think he will try to engage especially these persons who could be dissatisfied with the personal decisions. For example, this Tino Sorge from Saxony-Anhalt, who lost his job. So maybe he finds a new role for him that he will be more satisfied in a few weeks.
And I think, Michaela, just to add to what Andreas just said, the Conservatives will have to relearn some of the skills that they did have under Angela Merkel. Angela Merkel's strong point was that she foresaw situations that could become uncomfortable, and she would have conversations behind closed doors with people, not just with people who criticized her, but also with her supporters, to say, okay, if this person is going to come out and criticize what I'm doing, can you please raise your hand in this next meeting so that I'm not the only one defending myself? One of the big criticisms of Jens Spahn as parliamentary group leader was, after all, that he didn't have that skill in crucial votes last year. He didn't see it coming, that the Conservatives mm-hmm. were against the appointment of, you know, the Frauke Brosius-Gerstorf, who we also talked about on this podcast.
As a judge. Constitutional Court. Yeah.
Exactly. So he didn't see that coming. So that became a complete car crash. Then also the very vote to get Friedrich Merz elected as chancellor, he didn't see that coming either. So Thorsten Frey is much more of a communicator. And there is a big chance that now the parliamentary group is rediscovering that skill, that they will work more smoothly together with the Chancellery, and that, you know, Friedrich Merz, having come from the outside, who's learning politics and how to do it, how to do the job, we can all watch him do it. Maybe this is something where the Conservatives are going to get their act together again.
Earlier this week on Monday, when Friedrich Merz was presenting his new general secretary at the party, I actually got to ask him that very question on how certain he is of his own party following him. Let's take a listen.
How do you assess the mood in your party right now?
Well, I assume that things will have calmed down a bit by September.
Andreas, is the summer break going to be enough for this to blow over?
Yes, I think so. Short question.
Yeah.
Short answer, sorry. The second is the reminder. I mean, you have talked about that at the very beginning of our discussion. We have three elections coming mm-hmm. afterwards, and I think they will be very important also for the stability of this government, because we are talking about the Conservatives at the moment, but we don't know what's going to happen afterwards also for the coalition partner, SPD. So the stability I think will be there for the summer break now. The big question is how big the bruises will be for the Conservatives and Social Democrats in these three elections.
Now, Friedrich Merz showed himself very much aware of the task that is now right in front of him. With those three regional elections coming up, beginning with Saxony-Anhalt, where the far-right AfD could actually come into power. Let's just take a listen to what he said on that.
Naturally, none of us can be satisfied with the polling figures of 22 to 24%, numbers that place us only in second place. Since 1949, the CDU-CSU has always aspired to shape the future of our country. It has also always aimed to broadly represent the political center. We are not doing that at the moment. Therefore, we must all reflect together on what we need to improve, where we need to offer better policies, and how we can regain the trust of those who do not currently trust us. This is a task we must tackle collectively, the federal government, the parliamentary group and the party as the CDU-CSU. It is a challenge facing us in turbulent times.
So, a problem of representation.
It's a problem of representation. I mean, I mentioned that he has now new people in his leadership team, which have different opinions. I mean, I think that's what he referred to. And then we'll see. I think he's safe for the moment, although his biggest problem is maybe not ministers, but he himself, because he's not popular. Mm-hmm. He's less popular than his own party, which is normally a dangerous point for chancellors and party leaders. Angela Merkel, you mentioned it, she was always much more popular than the Christian Democrats, and that saved her even in very heated debates. But I think that the main debate about this chancellor will start next year after the elections in North Rhine-Westphalia.
Nina, you observed the Social Democrats very closely, particularly also the past government, as we saw support for the Social Democrats, and we continue to see it eroding. How concerned should both parties currently in this coalition be about no longer being able to represent enough of the populace, really, here in Germany?
I thought it was striking how silent the SPD were in the last couple of days. And it's almost like
they're just happy.
They're really happy not to be the ones having to answer all those journalists' questions about, you know, the terrible state your party is in. But they also don't want to give anybody the feeling that they're instrumentalizing it for themselves. So they're just staying out of it. They're staying completely silent. Matthias Miersch, the parliamentary group leader, said that he was sad to see Jens Spahn go, but that was about it. So this is the SPD on the federal level. Of course, it's different when you look at the regions where there's elections. And we saw that Armin Willingmann, who's the candidate in Saxony-Anhalt for the SPD.
Well, we see those first elections on the 6th of September.
Exactly. He's now saying that we should talk about lowering the threshold for political parties to make it into parliament to 3%. Because, you know, why? Yeah, his SPD is polling at around 4.5, 5, 6%, depending on when you ask and where you ask. So, of course, this is existential for the Social Democrats. One thing I can see that is different from the Conservatives, that they still do have talent, you know, in the second row. Sort of people like Hubertus Heil, who used to be a minister, could be presented. Say, if the elections, the regional elections, go terribly wrong for the SPD and the SPD have to send a very clear signal to voters, we got the message, we understand, okay, it's time to replace our leadership, they've still got talent somewhere. Boris Pistorius, the very popular defence minister, could also sort of be pushed more into the limelight again. I don't see that with the Conservatives. I mean, Friedrich Merz's reshuffle consisted of filling one gap with a person who was then leaving another gap. And it was sort of confirming that feeling that nobody likes him, that Friedrich Merz doesn't have any supporters. And that is not a very, very good signal, because it's also clear that Friedrich Merz doesn't want anybody who used to be with Angela Merkel in powerful positions.
How much of a problem is that, that he won't let anybody who has Merkel experience come near, anywhere near the top?
I think if that's really the case, and some people say that's really influencing his decisions, I think it's a problem. It's not clever. And as a chancellor, you shouldn't let yourself be dictated in your judgments and decisions by sentiments. So he has a problem with Merkel, we all know that, but that should not influence decisions. But I disagree a bit about about how you describe the Conservatives, because as we just said, Nina Wagen is a valid replacement. Thorsten Frey is considered to be a pretty good politician. And when we talk about 2029, we'll see who actually will run for the Conservatives. I mean, I don't want to say now that Thorsten Frey will be the candidate. I just want to hint that there are some more persons. And when we see the last regional elections, we tend to forget easily that they and the Social Democrats are successful in some regions. They have personalities who are obviously considered by a large part of the population to be the right leader. I mean, we have seen that with Gordon Schnieder, the brother of the just transport minister, who won in
Rhineland-Palatinate.
And we have seen that with Rehlinger in
Anke Rehlinger.
Saarland. And maybe we are going to see that with Manuela Schwesig in one of the three elections which are upcoming in the very northeast of Germany.
The Social Democrat,
who is popular, and in the last polls she is closing the gap to the AfD. So it's not that clear that this will be the last person's standing for the Conservatives and the Social Democrats. I think they still have the ability to revive themselves, but they have to do it in a clever way. What is the main problem today is this antagonism between the capital and the rest.
Absolutely.
But we see that in all countries. Yeah. I mean, also when you look at election results, you see it in Eastern Europe, where capitals are normally more liberal than the rest. You see it in Britain. London is voting differently than the rest. In Paris as well. So that's underlined by this presence in social media that people who are not close to the capital, who feel far from decision makers, who have the feeling they are not dealing with our problems in the province, that they are now louder than they could be before.
But we just saw that in Britain, and we did a podcast episode on that as well. They just elected one of their regional heroes that you're just talking about to become their new prime minister.
Andy Burnham, yeah, but and interestingly enough, he sees regionalization as the solution to many problems, whereas in Germany we see the whole federal structure of the state as a whole as an underlying problem when it comes to many areas. But we should probably do an episode on that. But I just want to end on the public sentiment, the public mood, and let you react to the analysis by the new German national coach for football, Jürgen Klopp, who believes very strongly that in the power of football. Let's take a listen.
If I close my eyes for a few seconds and imagine Germany becoming world champions in 4 years, the next day the neighbor wouldn't seem like such a jerk after all, or the weather wouldn't be so bad, or Friedrich Merz wouldn't do everything wrong, even though he's trying to get everything right. That's what football can change.
I agree completely. I'm just saying that for years, really. That part of the germ malaise is really our football team, national football team. I know it sounds.
We've done you did all this analysis.
and I destroyed it at the very end. Yeah, no, but I really believe in that. Germans, that's my feeling. We always see glasses as half empty, not half full. And we would like to have a national football team who's successful. I mean, we would like to have a country which is successful. But football, as Klopp rightly said so, is in a very important part of our mental health.
It plays a very strong role in identity building, and people need to rally around something. And currently it's not politics, it's not the good economy, And sadly, it's not good football either. So there's very big hope that Jürgen Klopp will turn things around and then he will just pull everybody along with him.
We have European Championship in 2 years.
That's the thing, because 4 years
that's before the
next scheduled election. So we'll conclude on that. This, of course, demands a lot more analysis for coming episodes in the future.
But we actually did do an episode football.
We did.
We
thought we could still win back then. So if you have any more questions on that, if there's a particular aspect, do drop us a line, leave your comments below, and check out our weekly newsletter, Berlin Briefing, as well, where we have all the latest analysis. We also had in-depth reporting and actually a special episode of Berlin Briefing on that terrorist attack that we saw here on Berlin Pride as well. And do drop us a line on what other aspects you want us to look at in more depth in the episodes to come as we approach those key regional elections on the 6th of September in Saxony-Anhalt, where the far-right Alternative for Germany could actually come into power for the very first time here in Germany. With that, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.